All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And I'm glad to announce that Dr. Michael Rosen is now a part of the show. And every other Tuesday, he'll be on at 9 o'clock. I'm really excited about his addition. You know, Dr. Rosen, the loss of... You were, before we went to break, and during break, you were talking about what percentage of the nation had union, people were unionized. You said back at the height of it, 35%, and today it's what?
Today it's 10%, but that's only 6%, 6.1% in the private sector. And so the 10% is only that high because there's still large numbers of public sector workers. That's police officers, firefighters, public school teachers, technical in this state, right. Some technical college instructors like my former colleagues at MATC.
So
social workers in some states.
So in this inequality that we are dealing with, and the anger and angst that so many people have who saw their middle class lives taken away. How do we begin to even attempt to rebuild it, Dr. Rosen? Because certainly the people who benefited, the business community from destroying unions aren't going to be in any hurry to all of a sudden say we're willing to share again.
Right. Well, I mean, I think there are a couple good examples. One is the Bucks Arena. An organization, MASH, Milwaukee Area Service and Hospitality Union Association, formed. And the Bucks owners, even though they were multi-billionaires, came to the state of Wisconsin, to Milwaukee County and the city of Milwaukee, and
put their hands out
and wanted public fund help, assistance to public fund the stadium. And what MASH was effective in doing was getting the public officials to say, well, if you're going to get public money, then you have to agree that, excuse me for a minute,
yeah.
You have to agree that that you will recognize the union, that you'll allow card check, which means that once 50% of the people, 50% plus one sign a union card, that they have the right to union representation, and that you'll negotiate with that union. And they also guaranteed, and this was a couple of years ago, a minimum salary for every employee, not just in the arena, but in the entire Bucks area, a minimum of 15. So that became the floor, and then MASH could negotiate up. That's one model, because what they're doing there is turning low-paid service work into attempting to turn low-paid service work into middle-class employment. That's one model, and just thinking about that going forward, we have... there's now talk about building a soccer arena at the western end of Wisconsin Avenue with a hotel and apartments, et cetera. And if it was good enough for the Bucks, it should certainly be good enough for this iron district as well. That's one way. Another thing that we're seeing happen, which I think is very positive, is that this younger generation is organizing unions in places like Starbucks, Amazon, in Queens, New York.
Right.
We've seen it at Trader Joe's, TJ Maxx. We've lost a lot of manufacturing. A lot of manufacturing has been lost to China and other countries, but China is the big one. And those jobs aren't coming back.
Right.
At least most of them. But the fact of the matter is that manufacturing jobs were low paid in this country until they were unionized in the 1930s. Now service sector employment at places like Amazon and Apple are low paid, okay? But they don't have to be. The reason that the owner of Amazon or the owners of Walmart are so extraordinarily wealthy, I mean extraordinarily wealthy, is because they are able to get, they've developed a low-wage anti-union model. if we can, if what we're seeing is the development of a unionization movement in the service sector that will force those companies to share the profits that they make, we can begin to build, rebuild the middle class in that way.
So Dr. Rosen, if I'm hearing you correctly, the way that unions came into existence in the 30s, that fight is the fight that has to be had again.
Yeah, and hopefully we're seeing, absolutely, and hopefully we're seeing it with this younger generation. The younger generation has grown up in a period, I mean, basically if you think about younger working people now,
they
grew up in the period of the Great Recession, the 2009 recession, in the transition from George W.
Right.
Bush to Barack Obama, then a very slow recovery under Obama, and then, of course, a COVID and that recession.
That's that Generation X you're talking about.
Yeah, and they have been. The opportunities that were available to previous generations, they haven't seen. They've deferred buying homes. They defer really starting careers. And now what we're seeing is some of them are saying, look, if I'm a barista at Starbucks, or if I'm working in an Amazon warehouse, or if I'm working at TJ Maxx, and they're making these extraordinary profits, I want them to share them with me. And what we're seeing is that contrary to the threats, that people are succeeding in unionizing, and now we'll see. Well, we hope that also Colectivo, by the way, locally. And what we'll begin to see is whether they can successfully negotiate contracts and develop a permanent relationship with their employers.
Dr. Rosen, I often think about the tenets of unionism and what it meant to me and my generation, and so we saw that. I mean, I remember coming into the union, and there were these older men like my father, and even though people might have not gotten along, they knew solidarity.
Right.
They knew the power of that, and so that was something that we had to learn as we came into unions. And I think where unions started falling, and I remember towards the end of my time, people would come into the unions and say, I don't need the union.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, somewhere along the line, and I thought the unions made a mistake for not continuously educating their workers to what it meant to be a union member, right?
Yeah, I mean,
and the history of it.
Yeah, I mean, one of the problems that unions experienced was success. I mean,
yeah.
it's ironic, but people were getting decent wages and benefits, whether they were working at a
right.
place like A.O. Smith or America Motors or
yeah.
In the skilled trades or at a place like MATC,
right?
Right? They're making good wages and benefits. And when people got hired there, they think, oh, I hit the jackpot.
Yeah.
And they didn't recognize or realize that the jackpot they hit took years of struggle, years of
right.
negotiation, years of sacrifice on the people that came before them. To, you know, we all have that slogan, we stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. But it's very easy for someone who comes in and is all of a sudden they go from making minimum wage to a family supporting
right.
union wage and health benefits to say, oh, this is great. I got it because I'm so smart
yeah.
or I'm so productive or I don't need the union. And and the failure of the unions, the union leadership, frankly, to continue to organize and mobilize new members came back to bite them. And of course that coupled with virulent attacks, both ideological attacks saying that unions were driving companies away,
right.
As well as legal attacks to simply undermine the unions.
You know, Dr. Rosen, the other part of it was that they were so masterful at telling people who weren't in unions that the union guys were fat cats and you don't want to be a part of that, and they don't independently do things. They're weak because they all, you know, if you just do things for yourself and you know, be an individual, the company's going to somehow see you and reward you for being a great worker. They actually led people in different areas to believe that kind of
thing. It was a you know, divide and conquer, right? I mean, and that's been an employer trick for as long as there have been employers, is to divide and conquer the workplace. At one point, one of the financier back in the 19th century said, I can always hire one half of the working class to kill off the other half. They've always used racial divisions, and our, more recently, as women came into the working place, gender divisions, to try to undermine solidarity and unity in the workplace. But the fact of the matter is that we know that both in our own history, that is the United States history, as well as looking at other countries, that countries that have high levels of unionization, countries like
Germany,
Denmark, Sweden, France, Canada, they have not only higher wages and benefits, they have better paths of upward mobility, and they have better social safety nets. Most of those countries, for example, have some form of universal health care. And that's all a result of high levels of unionization, because unions not only negotiate wages, benefits, and working conditions, but they are active in the political arena, making sure that some of the tax benefits are used for the beneficiary of working class and middle class people.
All right, got to go to a break. Dr. Michael Rosen is my guest. We'll be right back. You know, Dr. Rosen. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Dr. Michael Rosen. And you know, Dr. Rosen, man, I'm fascinated with that history of what took place even before my time as a union person. I always tell people, even to this day, I'm a union man. Once a union man, always a union man. And I will never ever be anything other than that, because you kind of realize that I know that my past life and the fact that we were able to live, when I tell people today the amount of money that we made 30, 40 years ago, you talk about the Bucks Arena and the $15 an hour. Well,
$30 an hour.
Yeah, I mean, you just realize that all of that was timing, right? Yeah.
I think if I talked about the period called the Great Compression, when inequality fell. Remember, for the very wealthy, I mean, the top marginal tax rate was 91%. That means that on every dollar they made over roughly $2 million, 91 cents went to the federal government, they kept 9 cents. But that money was used to provide social benefits to invest in public education. To invest in the interstate highway system. You know, all the kinds of infrastructure investments, all the kind of educational
parks.
Infrastructure investments. You know, that's what that money was used for. And of course, now again, the Great Compression was a period when you had high levels of unionization. That meant, and U.S. corporations were negotiating with unions. When you have high levels of unionization, it also means that people who are in non-union employers are still going to be paid more because they are in competition with the unionized employers. A classic example was American Motors in Kenosha, where American Motors in Kenosha employed thousands of people, and other non-union employers in the area had to meet that wage or they would constantly be losing their employers to American Motors when it hired. Another factor that played a role was the existence of the Soviet Union, frankly. And the Soviet Union claimed to be a workers' paradise. It wasn't, but it claimed to be. And it was in a Cold War with the United States of America. Well, there was a social compact in the United States where business and labor were working together. Business essentially said, we're going to allow unions to exist to negotiate wages, benefits, and compensation, wages, benefits, and working conditions. We'll sometimes fight over it. We'll have strikes. We'll have negotiations. But we're going to work together for the good of the company and the good of the community. And part of the motivation for that on the corporate side was that if they went after the unions, it would feed the propaganda of the Soviet Union that the U.S. was anti-worker, and it would help the Soviet Union win the allegiance of people in other countries in Asia, Africa, and Latin America, which the United States was competing with them for that allegiance. And what we see is that there were a combination of factors beginning in the early 1970s, that is declining profits, a decision by corporate America to go after labor, the lessening of the Cold War, and then finally the total collapse of the Soviet Union, and all of those factors combined to allow an all-out assault on labor. We saw that in this community beginning in 1974 when the meat packers, the meat cutters, right, in the valley and elsewhere went on strike. And really, for the first time in the history of Milwaukee, that is modern post-World War II history, I should say, scabs were brought in to break the union.
Right.
There was, you know, on day one, and they were successful. By 1975, the union was decertified, and a new model of labor relations had been established in this community.
Let's bring Dave on quickly. Dave, quickly.
Oh, I don't know if I can do it quickly. I just want to say I appreciate this discussion about the importance of unions. And I've had the experience of working in non-union shops in a factory, and one union shop at the end of my career. And the difference is night and day, and I think that there's not enough emphasis placed when talking about unions. It's not just the better wages. It's the job security and the way you're treated on the job. The non-union shops have temp services on speed dial. And if you happen to have a despotic supervisor or a supervisor you don't get along with, they will just fire you for nothing and get another temp in to replace you. In a union shop, that can't happen. Most union contracts have have three strikes protection. And you have your union steward. You know, they can't make things up.
Right, progressive discipline.
You know, reasons to fire you. Let me give you briefly one experience I had. This was in a non-union shop. I merely asked about why the company wasn't using a safety device, a ventilation system for a very toxic producing operation. 3 days later, I was fired. They told me they didn't like my performance. That would never happen in a union shop. So I think more emphasis should be placed on those kinds of benefits of being in a union shop.
Yeah, Dave, I think it's Dave, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Earlier I had mentioned that what we called back in the 30s, they called it industrial democracy. That is giving workers a voice on the job. Unions give workers a voice on the job. They allow them to speak out about unhealthy working conditions. And we know very well that in throughout U.S. history and industry, employers have been very negligent in terms of the chemicals people use or other working conditions that they provide because they want to cut costs to increase profits.
And I've experienced that firsthand.
Yeah. And the fact of the matter is that, is philosophically or morally reprehensible, but morality is not enough to convince employers who are cutting corners to do the right thing. What you need is some countervailing power, and the unions provide that countervailing power.
So, Dave, I want to thank you, man. We're going to have Dr. Michael Rosen in every other Tuesday morning, man, so we'll continue to have discussions. High school reunion. Let me do this. Let's go to the phone lines. Thomas from Oak Creek first. Hey, Thomas, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. What's going on?
All this talk about unions and stuff, I think to myself, I wonder why when we talk about them, do we not mention the elephant in the room, the fact that all these sports leagues, that all this money, the players get all this money, the owners get all this money, and they're all union. Like, so, you know, I feel like if we would talk about it in a way that we can relate to real life, like, look, like Tom Brady wouldn't give up his union, you know, Aaron Rodgers wouldn't. So why is it, you know, it's like something for the wealthy now, you know, like it's not... These people who make all these millions of dollars, they get all the protections and, you know, the mechanics and, stuff across the country, you know, we get to just have to fight for ourselves. If you would compare how it works for the players to how it would work for real life people, I feel like more people would, you know, like understand.
Let me ask you, man, are you a tradesman?
I am.
So
and I've never been union, and it sucks, you know.
Well, how can here's what I don't understand: how can you be a tradesman and not be a part of a union?
I've never had the opportunity.
What trade are you in?
I've been a mechanic for 20 years. I used to work in the automotive business, and now I am currently a forklift mechanic.
So
there's no options. Like, I've never even had an option. The only time I was in a union was when I was worked at Pick and Save. I believe I was in a union, like, one of my first jobs.
So let me say this to you, man. The fact that, you know, the tradespeople are in unions, all of them are in unions, and it's why they make the amount of money that they make and they have the protections that they have. And the fact that you are a mechanic and not in a mechanics union, I don't. That's something that I'm...
Honestly, if that's an option for me, I have no idea how to
you,
even...
So you need to check that out, because what it offers are protections.
Well, yeah, I'm for unions, you know? Like, that's, like, the point of my call. It's just, well, most of us don't have the option. Like, I know the dealers, the mechanics, the auto mechanics in Illinois, I believe, are unionized across the state, but we don't have that here.
And where do you work?
Where do I work?
Yeah, it's city, state. I mean, city?
New Berlin, Wisconsin.
Oh, New Berlin. Well, I can't believe it doesn't matter that, you know, it's the trade that you are in. that is either unionized or not. And I clearly believe that you know, a mechanic is a trade, and that you should be a part of a union. I can't believe that you aren't. But that's the whole purpose.
Back in when I worked on cars, guys would mention to the people, you know, about, you know, the managers and about unionizing, and they would get pushed out of their job for that.
Well, yes, so. because if you do that, and you guys are organized, then they have to benefits, you know, vacations, pensions. All of those things all come with being a part of a union and a future.
Right.
But I don't know. I think.
But what I'm saying is I have a friend who's an electrician and he's in a union, but it's a big part of the company. It's a big part of the culture. Like that's not the way it is in a lot of industries. From my experience.
Well, I don't understand.
And I don't know. How do I join a union when no one else in my
well, I would say this. I would say this to you: the one thing you don't do is start talking about the union, talking about a union in a shop that's non-union, because what will happen is they will fire you. And they don't want you to have a union. And yeah, so
that's what I'm saying. So how do you say join a union, but I don't see that it's never
well,
been
it so again it's a big undertaking. It takes some research. I would say the first thing you need to do is research and see if mechanics have a union or not, nationally, locally and nationally. That would be what I would do first. But don't make the mistake that I made when I was a young guy and tried to get rid of the union that we had, and it just about destroyed my family and cost me my job while my family was young. That's not something that people are going to look kindly upon. But that's what I do, man. I do some research and not talk about it anywhere near the shop and find out what your rights are and what your options are. Thank you very much for the call. I wish I could help you more. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. You know, I don't know. Connor, my guess, you couldn't reach her?
Yeah, I called a couple times.
Yeah. We'll call her back one more time.
Okay.
You know, that last caller, Thomas from Oak Creek, is a prime example of what needs to happen. We've got to re-educate a group of people all over again in this country about what the benefits of being a part of a union is. You know, had it not been for a union, you know, I receive a pension every month, you know, and I think I retired from the company at 52 years old. And so 16 years ago now is when I retired from the company. And during that 16 years, I receive a pension every month. And I got to tell you, people who are my age and worked in different venues and different places, they're still working because they didn't and don't have a pension. And you people may say, well, Earl, you're still working. If you want to call this work, I mean, this is not work, you know. I mean, on a job where I have to be 8 hours a day, you know, 5 days a week, I quit that 16 years ago, you know, because of the union and the opportunities that it presented to me and others like me. I look at Connor and young guys like him, and they may not have the opportunity that we had. You know, guys retired at 48, 30 years and out. So you worked 30 years and then you were done. If you chose to not ever work again, that's not happening anymore unless you're involved somewhere where there's a union. You know, that's the what really is what, and one of the reasons why they did away with that. Because what they did in place of pensions was they brought in the 401ks. And I never will forget when they first brought in 401ks. And for the workers who came in after us, they no longer offered them that. And they kind of destroyed all of that with a two-tier pay scale. And the world changed. And Connor, just put him on. Connor, just put him on. Yeah, you don't need to do any further. Just put him on. Is he on?
He just hung up. Look.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, but all of those things are part of what has changed the trajectory and the dynamic of this country, and now the struggle that people have and continue to have as they attempt to fight a system that is unequal when it comes to opportunities. And I know there are people who say, well, the opportunities are still here. Well, yeah, but there were opportunities before. And even though the people who were able to take advantage of those opportunities with their educations and all those things, there was also a whole dynamic of people who were able to live middle-class lifestyles in this country who didn't have those things. And that's not the case today. It does not exist. Listen, we've got to go to a break. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back.
No one else can make me feel the colors that you...
Hi, everyone. Listen to my show, The Matt McNeil Show, weekday afternoons at 3 p.m. on the Shaw 101. 1 hour every weekday where we'll talk all sorts of things like politics, especially with what's going on this election season, plus a lot of other things, too. Parenting, the arts, religion, music, beer. If it matters to Wisconsin and Minnesota, we'll talk about it. Phone calls are welcome at 952-946-6205. For 1 hour each day, come see the train chimp, The Matt McNeil Show, with the aggressive progressive Matt McNeil, 3 p.m. weekday afternoons right here on the Shaw 101.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, before we went to break and I got the call from the last caller, I was talking about high school reunions. And now I'm going to experience my 50-year high school reunion. And... you know, man, I really, you know, I mean, I don't feel that old, man. I don't feel like I've been out of high school 50 years. I really don't. I honestly don't. It's a hard thing for me to comprehend because I remember those times just like yesterday. It just goes to show just how short this life is. And as as, you know, the work to try to put together. Can you imagine being the point person trying to find these people that we were in school with 50 years later? And they're all over the country, all over the world. And you're the person who's in charge of, you know, bringing all of these people together. It's more than a notion, I can tell you that. And I'm really just waiting for a call from the person who has been the point person for, 10-year, 25-year, 35-year, and now 50-year reunion. We'll probably get her after the break. I don't know why we're having trouble. But anyway, that's, if you've had your 50-year high school reunion, give us a call at 844-967-2789. I used to watch that stuff on television, all of the different shows, and they would all have their 50-year reunion, and you'd see all these people, and they'd come in and they'd look around and they'd say, "Well, who is that person?" You're walking with trepidation because I just hope that it's not, you know, you kind of look like, it can't be because, you know, you've gained a few pounds, or it can't be the person who you know, everybody used to say was the greatest athlete, and now, you know, your stomach is down to your knees. You know, your 50-year reunion is a humbling time. Or, you know, the most beautiful couple, and now there's no hair on either one of your heads. It's a humbling experience, but I'm looking forward to it. You know, I went to my, 10 and maybe 25-year reunion, but this is going to be kind of exciting for me. And again, I'm going to be talking to and working with the young lady who has put all of this work and energy in. Can you imagine being that person? Can you imagine a thankless position, a thankless, opportunity? And so that's all right, Connor. If you can't reach her, that's fine. We'll do it after the break. But anyway, that's what we'll be talking about as I await the call from my friend. I want to talk now about, where is it at? Right here. No, that's not it either. Where is it at? Here it comes. Why would you? Okay, all right. Toxins bill set to expand care for veterans exposed to Agent Orange. Listen, I always talk about this because one of my brothers wound up in Vietnam at 17 years old. And he was in the jungle. And he was doing what's called walking point. Connor, you got any idea what walking point is?
No, I don't.
So imagine a 17-year-old kid. You're now 20. Imagine at 17 years old, you find yourself in a jungle with an automatic weapon halfway around the world in the country that you don't know anything about, nobody you know, and your job is to walk through the jungle, and you're the guy out front surveying the jungle where there are people there whose job it is to kill you, and your life is expendable. So your job is to walk through this jungle and protect the rest of the people. Well, my brother did that. And he did that at 17 years old. He volunteered for the service. Back then, you could do that. Mm-hmm. And he walked point several times. And when they asked him to do it the last time, he told them no. And so he spent a year in Vietnam. But because he told them no the last time that he wasn't going to walk point anymore, I think based on the story that I was told, you couldn't walk point more than two or three times, and this was above the amount of times. And the odds are the more you walk point, the more the chances are you aren't going to make it. And so he was discharged from Vietnam with a dishonorable discharge, even though he put his life on the line and fought for the nation, and didn't receive his benefits until he was almost 54 years old. Mm. Now, I don't know, and I know, Connor, you're still very young, but they use something called Agent Orange to defoliate the jungles of Vietnam. Vietnam was a paradise, or is a paradise. And so if you walk through the jungles, the vegetation is so heavy and strong that you can hide inside of that vegetation. So what our government did was dropped chemicals called Agent Orange to defoliate the jungle so that our soldiers could see the Viet Cong who hid and, you know, underground and could hide in that heavy foliage. And they were really creating heavy losses on the soldiers in Vietnam. But while they were dropping that Agent Orange, it was impacting and affecting the American troops. And so when they got home, they told the government about the fact that children were being born with birth defects, and that the illnesses and sicknesses that they had accumulated and died early and young, and their offspring were born with birth defects and all of those things. And when they challenged the government and said, hey, you guys exposed us to this, our government said no. And our government did not admit to it until many of those men, like my brother, got to be in their mid-50s and 60s. And then the government finally said, oh, okay, yeah, okay. Here's the money that we should have probably been giving you ever since you guys came back from Vietnam. They didn't give it to them until they were in their 60s and late 50s because they don't have as long to live. And so that's what they did. Well, just so happens that there's a bill floating through Congress right now, called a toxins bill, and is set to expand the care for veterans exposed to Agent Orange. Those veterans, many of them now in their 70s. And it is tragic that once again our government did not take care of the men and women that they sent to fight and die for this nation. And we'll talk about it a little bit later after we come back from break. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. We'll be right back.